This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the program. I don't know if any of you were watching television on Tuesday night. Jeopardy, my favorite game show, one which I've always aspired to be on someday, and God knows it may yet happen. Jeopardy had it as his final question, who signed a bill in April such and such of 2001 outlawing punched card voting systems? And the answer, which all of the contestants got, was Governor Jeb Bush. This is a subject we've addressed before on this program, and I'm pleased to announce that the Sacramento News and Review, last week's article, that would be the June 5th edition, had quite an interesting article by our good friend Cosmo Garvin. Cosmo's out of town. We weren't able to get him for this show, but I believe we will have him on next week's show to discuss his article, The Paper Chase. If you didn't get one off the newsstands, I would suggest you go onto the web. The web address is www.newsreview, one word, newsreview.com, and look up this article. I'm really looking forward to going over this with Cosmo Garvin. I would like to just quote the opening of the article. Last week, the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors walked to the edge of the abyss, took a long look, and then took a giant step back. Well, that may be overly dramatizing it a bit, but the supervisors did consider a proposition many find genuinely scary. Tossing out our old punch card voting machines and replacing them with a fancy new computerized system, and decided for now not to go there. The sparsely attended meeting merited not even a mention in the local press last week, but what didn't happen there is in many ways more important than what did. In the wake of the 2000 election debacle, there's been a federal order that apparently other states need to modify their electoral systems so that they're more like the Sunshine State. I don't want to go overboard on it today, but believe me, we're going to have a few things to say about it on next week's show. I believe Cosmo will be with us at that time, and we will get into what is truly a scary system. Now, you know, if you don't have punched voting cards, aren't we pretty much dependent upon the people that are making the voting machines, dependent upon their honesty not to steal elections? I don't think this nation should be dependent upon two manufacturers of equipment to determine the validity of our national elections. Anyway, that's all for now on this subject. We will be returning to it. In our second segment today, we have something very special for you. Last week marked the 35th anniversary of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. For this program, we attended a commemoration of that event that took place in Los Angeles. It was quite a fascinating matter. It was put on by the Coalition on Political Assassinations, or COPA. We obtained several interviews in conjunction with that interesting event. Today's will be with William Turner, a former FBI agent who turned investigative journalist in the 1960s. Bill Turner's story is truly amazing. His most recent book is called Rearview Mirror. And I can't recommend this book highly enough to you if you're interested in political events that took place during the 1960s, 1970s, and up to today. William Turner wrote one of the very best books on what happened to Robert Kennedy in Los Angeles 35 years ago today. And it may surprise a lot of you to be aware of the fact that the assassination of Bobby Kennedy is really not an open and shut case, contrary to what you may have heard, at least in my opinion, that's true. And I will, by the time you're done with today's show, you can judge for yourself. Sirhan Sirhan was captured literally with a smoking gun in his hand. But to say that that's really the end of it, well, stay tuned. Let's go back to current events. In fact, let's go back to the News and Review. There's an excellent article in this same issue by Melinda Welch on Kucinich Reloaded, where she talks about Dennis Kucinich's appearance right here at the Varsity Theater a couple of weeks back, one that I told you about on the show last week. Melinda Welsh wrote a great little article on this topic. I've invited her to appear on the show. Perhaps she will. I hope she does next week to talk a little bit about Dennis Kucinich. I don't think, and she doesn't think, I don't think that Dennis Kucinich is going to be the Democratic nominee for president in 2004. But his campaign is very interesting. He is he's saying a lot of things, boldly saying a lot of things that I think that that Democrats should be saying, but they seem to be cowed by the popularity of George W. Bush at the moment and seem to not want to rock the boat. I think this is a mistake. And, you know, even if he does not become the nominee, I think he will influence, I hope he influences anyway, the course of what the Democratic nominee must do to win. And I think I would be dishonest if I didn't say on this program that I do hope that George W. Bush is not reelected in 2004. I do not like what his cabal, I guess you could say, the GOP cabal that he is the figurehead of, is doing to the country. And on exactly this topic, I would refer you to a man who always manages to summarize what's going on in American politics in a few panels of his cartoon, Tom Tomorrow's This Modern World. Last week, did a takeoff on the old Highlights magazine, which always for children would illustrate the well-behaved child and the badly behaved child, contrasting Goofus and Gallant. In this case, Goofus, it was, who will the Democrats nominate in 2004? Rude and aggressive Goofus or considerate, well-mannered Gallant? Dan Perkins, who of course is Tom Tomorrow, then goes on to, I won't read all of the panels because there's seven more, but it was candidate Goofus challenges the president's record on terrorism. They've got a rather Dennis Kucinich-looking figure at the podium saying, while he's been busy invading unrelated countries, Al-Qaeda's regrouped, leaving us more vulnerable than ever. Contrasted with candidate Gallant, politely suggest ways in which the president could do an even better job. And so, if we beef up security at certain entry points, we'll be even safer than we are now. I don't know what it says about the circle I run in, but most people I know are not big fans of the Bush administration. But there's a great debate as to whether we want to, whether people want to embrace an electable candidate or someone who's rabble-rousing, saying a lot of things that sound good, but really doesn't seem to have a chance of getting elected, like Dennis Kucinich. I don't know. We're going to have to come back to that topic in the future. Now, I'd like to state for the record at this point, I don't consider this program to be liberal. We frequently find ourselves on the same side as liberals, but this is not always the case. Now, one editorial I've been saving, which, again, it sounds like this is the News and Review show today, but it actually was the News and Review several months back, April 3rd. I saved it because I wanted to come back to it at some point, and I think today is that point. There was an editorial written by Juniper Rogers, local poet and writer in Sacramento, who suggested in the News and Review that you just say no to panhandling. She suggests that you should look the person straight in the eye, say no politely but firmly. This usually surprises the panhandler, she says, who may not press further. She suggests that you inform the panhandler that you give your money to established charities and not to individuals who invade your privacy. That's what I do. That's what I recommend that you do. I agree with Juniper Rogers when she says that panhandling can be the result of mental illness, drug addiction, unemployment, or lifestyle choice, but we perpetuate bad behavior when we hand over cash to people we know nothing about. I completely agree with Juniper Rogers' editorial when she says, we cannot assess their needs in a passing moment. This is better left to drug counselors, social workers, medical professionals, and clergy. A better choice is to give our money and volunteer time to established charities. The easier we make it for people to stay addicted, to refuse to take their medication, and to stay sick, the more entrenched panhandling will become. Resources are available to help panhandlers. Let's help them get the help they obviously need by just saying no to begging and panhandling. That may cut across the grain of traditional liberal perspective on the issue of homelessness and panhandling, but we must do what we can to not perpetuate this situation. Now, the News and Review, of course, is quite a liberal, progressive publication. Less so would be National Review. But again, I have to admit, I find myself agreeing with the editorial, which was cited in The Week magazine, which, of course, takes news from everywhere and reprints it. John Derbyshire in the National Review, actually it was in the National Review Online, I guess their online version, had some comments that I'd like to repeat for you. San Francisco may be America's loveliest city, says John Derbyshire, but it has one major flaw. Its streets are lousy with homeless people. On a recent visit to the city, I was shocked by what I saw. Half the lunatics, drunks, and drug addicts in America are here. They harass passerbys, defecate in public spaces, congregate in huge odoriferous battalions. Even in the open spaces downtown, you can't avoid the stink. This utterly confounds the good liberals of this last bastion of flaming liberalism. As one writer for the San Francisco Chronicle recently put it, the homeless population is soaring, quote, despite the millions of dollars the city spends annually to help its most desperate residents, unquote. Despite? Asked John Derbyshire. San Francisco hands out $395 a month to any homeless person who steps forward to claim it, requiring absolutely nothing of them. It offers them a fine, temperate climate and public fountains where they can bathe and urinate. Quote, and still their numbers increase, unquote, these fine idealists marvel. Quote, how can this be? Derbyshire asks, how indeed? The awful alternative, of course, would be to enforce vagrancy laws and sweep the bums and junkies off the street and keep them locked up in shelters until they showed some inclination to cease being a nuisance, an embarrassment, and a danger to their fellow citizens. But that would be a violation of their rights, and that wouldn't be America, would it? Now, I'm not sure I recommend that we lock up homeless people, as Mr. Derbyshire recommends in National Review magazine, but his points are well taken. If you've been downtown, if you've been down near the Theater District on Market, near the Curran Theater, or down near City Hall, you've seen these battalions of homeless people out there that are constantly hitting you up for money. It really is. Foreign visitors that come to San Francisco are astounded by the numbers of people who hit them up. And I have to say, I do have to laugh along with Mr. Derbyshire at the writer for the Chronicle saying that despite the millions of dollars the city spends, that the numbers are increasing. What a surprise. Apparently, these well-meaning folks in San Francisco, I think, would go down to the park with a lot of corn, throw it out for the pigeons, and then express surprise that the next time they went out, there were more pigeons. I'm sorry if this sounds calloused, but the truth is, something has to be done about the homeless situation in this country, and I make a policy not to give money to people who panhandle in the street. I think that you should follow the advice of Juniper Rogers that appeared in the News and Review. But anyway, enough on that topic. Now, before we lose all of you progressives and liberals out there in the Radio Parallax listening audience, let me say that I am outraged, as I'm sure you are, by the following story, which we got off the web. Reuters News Service, U.S. government gave away Taxol. Apparently, the General Accounting Office, which is the Congress's investigational arm, issued a report last week that was released by Senator Ron Wyden, an Oregon Democrat. Wyden said the federal government repeatedly dropped the ball on Taxol. Now, Taxol has been the best-selling cancer drug ever. It earned $9 billion for Bristol-Myers Squibb over a 20-year period between 1983 through 2002. What's interesting is the National Institutes of Health, that's you and me, the taxpayer, spent almost $500 million in research on Taxol. It was then licensed to Bristol-Myers Squibb, who earned, again, $9 billion. Now, keep in mind that the U.S. government, the NIH, got back $35 million in royalties during this time period, while Medicare, the state federal health insurance plan for the elderly, paid out almost $700 million for Taxol over the last 5 years. Senator Ron Wyden suggests the government should negotiate a little harder to make sure that when drugs are turned over to private companies, the taxpayers get a little more back, and I certainly would agree. And joining us now is our special Middle East correspondent, Colonel Skip Klondike. Colonel Klondike.
Yes, sir.
How are things in Doha, Qatar?
Going swimmingly. Everything's fine. We're arranging one-touch voting for Iraq as we speak.
Paperless electronic voting.
We are perfecting the software now. Things should go very smoothly in Iraq. Trust me.
How is the search for weapons of mass destruction coming along?
Oh, we have many leads. By the way, we're changing the operation's name.
It had a name?
Well, we do like to identify operations to avoid confusion.
Like Operation Desert Shield or Desert Storm?
Or Just Cause in Panama or Safe Harbor in Haiti or Joint Forge in Bosnia. Yes, sir.
So what was the name of the operation to find the weapons?
Well, we like clear names that reflect a forward-thinking attitude. Should be something that reveals policy in the title, like Operation Constant Vigil in Bolivia for cocaine monitoring.
Okay, and the weapons of mass destruction search was named...
Operation Picayune Intelligence. The word Picayune reflects, of course, the diminutive nature of the agents that could be microbes, for example.
Well, they're as Picayune as they come.
Exactly, and the word intelligence because this is an intelligence-intensive search.
So why change it?
Well, it turns out the fine people at Jay Ward Cartoons have the copyright on Picayune Intelligence.
Oh, from the old Rocky and Bullwinkle show.
I believe that is correct, yes, sir.
So, what's the new name?
Operation Where's Waldo.
As in, Where's Waldo?
Precisely. Waldo, Weapons of Mass Destruction. We have obtained that copyright, and it has rendered just as catchy a title.
So, Waldo is Weapons of Mass Destruction, WMDs?
WMDs, Waldo, close enough, whatever. The thing is, we have a name for the search. And we have located a mobile trailer that contains growth medium and confirmed spores.
Spores, you say?
That is correct. Confirmed bacterial spores.
In a trailer?
The vehicle contained growth medium, digested plant materials mixed with local soil.
Uh-huh.
Arrayed in a gravity-directed manner.
So you had a horse trailer with manure on the floor?
That's an affirmative, yes, sir. And let me add that among the spores found are several confirmed as Clostridium botulinum.
Botulinum.
Which, as you might know, produces the world's most deadly toxin, Douglas.
And it's also known as Botox, Colonel.
Well, you know, it kills in low doses, sir, the lowest known.
Yes.
That is a fact.
But people in Beverly Hills also use that toxin to smooth out forehead wrinkles.
Yes.
And Clostridium spores might be found in any mix of horse-manured soil.
Well, we also found Clostridium tetani live bacteria, Douglas.
So?
Tetani.
So?
Couple that with the fact that we have proof that Saddam's troops were being immunized against the toxin made by this microbe.
And that proves what?
It proves that a weapon of mass destruction, or WAMDO, was being prepared for imminent use.
No, it means that the Iraqis got their tetanus shots.
Well, we may not have located traditional weapons of mass destruction, granted, but we've found technology that could have been employed to devastating effect.
Like?
Like large vats of Saccharomyces cultures.
Brewer's yeast?
Call it what you will, but it is a favored microbial agent for numerous research avenues, including those that might be employed as weapons.
Colonel, it can also be used to make beer.
No comment.
Any other earth-shaking revelations?
We have located numerous high-tech chronometers with radioactive elements incorporated in their design. You should have seen our Geiger counters. They went nuts when we got near the storage vault.
Well, sir, how would that differ from, say, a safe that contained Rolexes with radium dials?
I cannot comment on any such differences.
Anything recovered from that nuclear waste disposal site that was looted when it went unguarded?
I am happy to report that we secured 3 glow-in-the-dark Frisbees that had been disposed of at that site. Yes, sir.
Well, strong work.
Thank you.
Well, Colonel, please come again.
Yes, sir. I'd be happy to do so.
You know, I gotta say, I always loved that joke on the Rocky and Bullwinkle program. They apparently combined the names of two newspapers, the New Orleans Times-Picayune with the St. Louis Post-Intelligence. On the program, they would refer to a newspaper as the Picayune Intelligence. I'm still laughing over that 30 years later. We've got to take a short break. Joining us after the break will be investigative journalist and former FBI agent William Turner. This will be an interesting segment. Stick around. This is Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett.